Arthur Breaks His Code, written by Ravenflight 21 and read by Eos Rose. Arthur had been brought up to live by the rules. From an early age, he had been drilled in the Knight's Code, and he'd never questioned its justness. But while he was still a young boy, he had discovered that the Knight's Code didn't give any guidance in the really important areas of his daily life. So he drew up his own list of regulations, which he thought of as Arthur's Code. At first, this had been a simple list of 6 unbreakable rules. 1. Always do what his father told him. 2. Remember he is better than almost everyone else. 3. Never do something for himself when he could get a servant to do it. 4. Always eat the tomatoes and potatoes, both of which he hated. 5. Don't cry. 6. Never ask about his mother. As he got older, he found it necessary to amend some of these rules. With rule number 4, for example, he found ways of concealing the disgusting vegetables and getting one of the servants to drop them into the basket of rotten food that the townspeople threw at offenders in the stocks. And as he grew a little older, he discovered that his list was incomplete. He learned, often by trial and error, that there were many other unspoken laws in Camelot. For example, 7. Always attack others before they attack you. 8. Never accept Morgana's challenges. 9. Don't molest the servants. Again, Arthur found that some of these regulations could be adjusted. As he reached his mid-teens, he reworded number 9 as, "Don't molest the servants unless they molest you first." He'd been gratified to discover that quite a few of the castle's maidservants were happy to molest a teenage prince. Recently, however, something had rocked the firm foundations of Arthur's world. Much to his consternation, he was beginning to believe some of the rules on which he'd based his entire life weren't as reliable as he'd thought. Take rule number 1, always do what his father told him. He had always accepted his father's word as law, but nowadays he found himself defying the king more and more. He had helped that little druid boy escape, against Uther's wishes, and he'd gone to Merlin's village to help the people fight the bandits, even though his father had expressly forbidden it. As for rule number 2, remember he is better than almost everyone else, he now knew that to be a load of nonsense. He may be the crown prince, but in no way was he a better man than someone like Lancelot. In fact, Lancelot's bravery and chivalry had made Arthur question the Knight's Code itself. Nor was he better than Merlin, for that matter, and he was a mere servant. After all, Merlin had risked his life by drinking poison for Arthur's sake. Merlin's actions always seemed to put Arthur's beliefs under strain. Rule number 3, never do something for himself when he could get a servant to do it, was still pretty much okay, but he'd even started breaking this one. And really, that was Merlin's fault, too. When Merlin had been getting ready to fight the bandits in his village, it had seemed wrong to let him dress Arthur in his armor. In his home village, Merlin had seemed more like an equal than a servant. Come to think of it, he seemed to remember he'd even helped to dress Merlin. But that was only because the idiot was all fingers and thumbs when it came to putting on his own armor. At least rule number 4 still applied, though the sight of Merlin covered in bits of tomato flesh and potato peelings after his umpteenth punishment in the stocks had somehow made the vegetables seem more appealing. Rule number 5. Don't cry. He stuck by that one, of course, because boys just don't. He wouldn't think about how, as a young lad, rule number 6, the one about his mother, had often caused him to break number 5 when he was sure he couldn't be overheard. Remembering those lonely nights made him think about Merlin and his plucky mother, Huneth. Merlin was so lucky to have been raised by a mother who obviously loved him so dearly. He wished someone loved him that much. So what about number 7? He still believed attack was the best form of defense, but he'd begun to wonder whether there were some people he shouldn't really defend himself against. His first instinct had been to knock Lancelot down and dismiss him as some lame friend of Merlin's, but look at what a hero he'd turned out to be. Perhaps it would be pleasant not to be always on the attack, making sure that no one got too close to him. He vaguely remembered Merlin calling him friend once, but Arthur had quickly put him in his place, making it clear he was just a servant. Shame that, really. So next comes number 8, Morgana. Sometimes she could take his breath away with her beauty and daring, and she often cared deeply about things. Take that druid boy, for instance. When she'd asked him to help the boy for her sake, he hadn't been able to refuse. Still, generally, she was a pain, always trying to prove herself his equal, or, God help her, even his better. Silly girl. So number 8 remained a good rule, though perhaps a bit more flexible than it used to be. Rule number 9. Well, he'd gone and broken that one well and good, make no mistake. After all, that was why he was sitting here, reflecting on his life, something he couldn't remember ever having done before. Things were always more straightforward when you followed the rules, and he only had himself to blame over number 9. It had all gone wrong when they'd gone on a hunting trip that afternoon. Even though Merlin insisted he didn't want to kill any creature that hadn't done anyone any harm, Arthur insisted on teaching him to hunt. They were on the edge of a glade in the forest. The air was very still, and the trees were motionless in the warm summer sun. Arthur spotted wild boar tracks in the mud at the edge of a large puddle in the clearing. Arthur waited for signs of movement in the glade. He gestured to Merlin to raise the crossbow in readiness. Merlin, looking very uncomfortable, did as he was asked. Arthur stood close up behind Merlin and put his arm on Merlin's to steady the bow. Arthur whispered, almost below his breath, that they should remain silent and still, and wait. They stood, bodies barely touching, for about 15 or 20 minutes. The heat intensified as the sun broke through the branches of the trees, and shadows dappled the ground. Arthur could feel Merlin breathing. He imagined he could feel the blood pulsing through Merlin's arm and his back where they were touching each other. Arthur's breath caught in his throat. His own heart seemed to be thumping louder and louder, and a drop of sweat trickled down his chest. Ever so gently, Arthur snaked his left hand around Merlin's waist. He slowly, so very slowly, worked his fingers under the bottom of Merlin's tunic, letting his fingers play lightly on Merlin's belly. He gradually dropped his right hand down from Merlin's arm, letting his fingers find Merlin's buttocks, slowly caressing the crease between them with his thumb. The throbbing of his own heart seemed to grow deafening as he brought his mouth to the back of Merlin's neck and, as gently as possible, brushed his lips against the nape. Merlin gave a yelp, dropped the crossbow, and turned towards Arthur with a terrified look. Scarlet in the face, he pushed the prince away. He bolted towards the horses, tripping over shrubs and roots as he went. Before Arthur could get his brain working again, Merlin had climbed on his horse and ridden out of sight. Arthur cursed loudly and kicked angrily at the ground. He had forgotten his damned rule number 9. Now he'd offended Merlin and lost not only a servant, but someone who had become much more precious to him. There was nothing for it. He'd have to return to Camelot and apologize to Merlin. If Merlin could bring himself to forgive Arthur, perhaps they could return to the way things were before he had made such a fool of himself. He remembered the dropped crossbow and looked for it on the ground. To his surprise, he could see nothing but a patch of scorched grass. Oh well, there were more important things to worry about, so he mounted his horse and rode back to the castle. Upon his return, Arthur strode straight towards Merlin's quarters, a grim, determined look on his face. Gaius answered the door, looking severe, opening it only a crack.
"Can I help you, sire?"
he asked in an expressionless voice. Arthur said he needed to speak to Merlin.
"I'm afraid he's indisposed, sire,"
Gaius replied stonily.
"But I really do need to speak to him, Gaius,"
Arthur pleaded.
"It's not possible. Good night, sire."
And Gaius shut the door in Arthur's face. Dear God, Merlin must have told Gaius that Arthur had molested him. He'd noticed how Gaius treated Merlin almost like a son, so no wonder the physician had been so curt. And all this was why Arthur now found himself sitting on the stairs near Gaius's rooms, wishing he could return to the days when he had lived his life by Arthur's code. After a while, Gaius came out of his room with a bottle of medicine tucked under his arm and set off along the corridor, away from Arthur. The prince tiptoed over to Gaius's study and quietly opened the door. He made his way up the steps to Merlin's room. Merlin was sitting on the bed with his knees hugged to his chest. He jumped violently when he saw who had entered the room. Arthur, standing as far away from Merlin as was possible in the cramped room, immediately said,
"Don't be afraid. I won't touch you. I'm here to give you my most heartfelt apology for insulting you in the forest. I truly hope that, with time, you can come to forgive me and we can again be..."
Arthur stuttered to a halt. He didn't know what to say. Master and servant? That's not what he meant. Friends? That didn't really cover it either.
But you saw what happened to the crossbow, Merlin blurted out.
Whatever Arthur had imagined Merlin might say, it wasn't that.
The crossbow? That hardly matters, Merlin. I've got lots. Hundreds, in fact.
Merlin gawped at him.
But I burned it, he said.
I'm not sure what you're talking about. You did manage to chuck it so far away I couldn't find it again.
But Merlin, it really doesn't matter, Arthur said, looking a bit nonplussed.
What I need to know is, can you ever forgive me? Merlin scrutinized Arthur's face for a moment, and then gave a sigh of relief. A huge smile broke over his face.
Forgive you? He asked. What on earth for?
With that, he uncoiled his legs and stepped closer to Arthur. He took his hand and led him back towards the bed. He pulled him down next to him, tilted his head, and brought his mouth to Arthur's. The two of them kissed so gently it was as though they were back in the still, silent forest. Then Arthur became less patient and increased the urgency of the kiss. He pushed Merlin down on the bed and started peeling at his clothes. He stripped off Merlin's tunic, and as Merlin seemed preoccupied with kissing Arthur's neck, he pulled off his own as well. They pushed off their leg hose and lay together, kissing and touching and twisting together. Then Arthur rolled on top of Merlin so that their chests and bellies and cocks were touching, and he rubbed his body over Merlin's. The speed of his movements increased, and they both shut their eyes as the sensation grew more intense. In only a few minutes, neither of them could hold back, and they both climaxed with groans that might have frightened away any wild boar for many miles around. Then they lay together, looking at each other. After a few minutes, Merlin spoke.
"In case you were still wondering," he said, "I forgive you."
"Actually, I guessed as much," Arthur replied. So, after all, he'd been proved right about rule number 9. It was always absolutely, definitely wrong to molest the servants. Unless, of course, they molested him first. The End.